This time now, 8:28. Good morning. Well, this Wednesday, Park City screening the documentary Era of Megafires. It's being followed by a panel discussion about preparedness and protection of lands and the community. In the studio to preview the discussion, I have Park City Chief Building Official Dave Thacker. Good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
So you have not seen the film?
I have not. No, mm-hmm. I've heard about it. I've talked with our emergency manager, Mike McComb, who has seen it, and he wanted to make sure it was brought to the community. So it'll be my first opportunity to see this as well, and then create and have the discussion with the community.
Okay. So what's it about? I mean, do you have any idea?
Yeah, it is. It's generally speaking, right? I mean, there's more in depth in the film, of course, but it talks about how we've really had a lot of huge mega fires or large fires throughout the country and actually worldwide in reality. We're going to focus more on how that pertains to Park City and the surrounding communities. It's a Summit County, Wasatch County. We're trying to make this more of a community-wide event so that we can get more people involved, because it's, you know, when a wildfire starts, it's not necessarily where it is, but it's where it's going to go, and how we work with our other communities to ensure that we can create a safe community and help at least slow the fire if one should start.
So the panel following the screening, it's big. It features representatives from the U.S. Forest Service, the Utah Department of Natural Resources, Park City Emergency Management, and more. As the city's chief building official, I mean, what role do you and your office play in the conversation around wildfire prevention and management?
Sure. Part of my title, along with chief building official, is fire code official as well. And so we have the fire marshal that directly works in our office, Eric Hales, who most recently replaced Kurt Simister, who was in that role. So we work with as-built structures and structures under construction to ensure that they're built in a safe manner, whether that be fire sprinklers on the interior of the home, or if we're looking at defensible space on the exterior of the home for new build construction. We'd like to make sure that we're doing all that we can to prepare a structure should something catastrophic start.
Yeah, do our historic district guidelines still get in the way? I mean, because we like wood as opposed to maybe brick or structure,
right,
or stucco.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know that we'd consider them getting in the way. There are several treatments and fire-resistant possibilities for even historic structures. So it does create some challenges, there's no question, but we've worked through that. We've worked on several homes with homeowners and contractors to ensure that we can create those safer structures.
Yeah, and with the buildings so close together, is that mm-hmm. also a concern?
It can be. It depends on the type of fire. Of course, if we're having a wildfire and it's rushing down a canyon, sometimes that can be beneficial because there's less vegetation. It slows the fire and the impact thereof. The other great thing that we have, and it's been instituted a long time ago and we're continuing to enforce, it is the fire sprinkler provision for the interior of the home. So we do have a little bit of safeguarding there. It doesn't necessarily protect the exterior of the structure at all times, but there are possibilities that it can help in that, you know, in the fire instance.
And those are only required in kind of those interface areas, or where do you require
indoor fire sprinklers are required throughout the city currently. So whether it's an interface area or whether we're right here downtown, every new structure that's built requires a fire sprinkler system to be installed.
Even in a home,
that's correct, yes. Yep. Yeah, we've worked with the state, and we have a state amendment that we look back to, and it's been for years. I mean, back to the Ron Ivey era that this started, but even new homes are required to have fire sprinkler systems.
Yeah. Have you seen problems as a result of installing all those, I mean, with leaks and pipes bursting and things like that?
You know, I'm not going to say there haven't been some leaks or pipes burst, but it's very similar, especially the way the current code's set up. The way the fire sprinkler systems are installed, they're installed more like a plumbing system now. So water's running through them at all times, similar to what goes to your sinks or your showers. And so, you know, maintenance is just similar to having a plumbing system. And there are going to be leaks over time as parts get old and homes age. But, you know, minor maintenance is able to help through some of that.
So do we require exterior sprinklers as well?
Not in all places. There was a time that we did have some exterior sprinklers that were required in some of the, you know, urban wildland spaces that are more in the Flagstaff area or up on the hills. You know, we've been back and forth on the requirements there. Some designs require them, some do not. It depends on the type of system they put in.
Yeah. So kind of what's your mindset, I mean, with regard to fire in Park City? Is it a matter of just, it's not a matter, I guess, of if, as it is just when?
You know, unfortunately, I think that's the case. You cannot prevent it 100%, unfortunately. There are lightning strikes. There are natural types of fires that get started. And so it's a matter of how we prepare ourselves. And that's what this panel discussion is really going to be about. It's how we look at where we are, where we live, where we reside. And we start with our own properties, and we look at to what we can do to create a better defensible space so that we can obviously not stop the impact, but we can minimize the impact, and we can give those that are trying to fight that fire a better opportunity to be able to put it out and save a few properties as well.
Yeah. So Park City is surrounded by lots of green space. I mean, correct, certainly in the green now and dry in the later on in mm-hmm. the later fall. Should it catch fire? I mean, how would the city respond? I mean, does it just depend on the neighborhood?
You know, I think every fire, it's hard to give a hypothetical for how the city would respond, because obviously there are going to be a lot of agencies that are involved, particularly if it's a wildfire that starts. Park City Fire District is great in their responses. They do a wonderful job in getting there, but a wildfire would definitely incorporate them and other resources from the state, wildfire teams, et cetera. So to say this is the direction we would go would be, you know, something that would lead someone down a wrong path.
Yeah, so do you have sort of emergency scenarios then for the various neighborhoods?
Typically we do. I think mm-hmm. that's more of the, you know, that's a Park City Fire District type scenario, yeah, and the wildfire teams as well. We as a department, we do the investigations after the suppression has taken place. So they do have protocols in place for sure, and I wouldn't be able to speak to those very well.
What about Bonanza Flat? I mean, it's city-owned property located in Wasatch County. Who's responsible for responding there?
Yeah, so currently the way it's set up, Wasatch County would be the responding agency. We do own it, but we don't have the governing authority to go ahead and do that work there.
Okay. And what unique problems could arise for Park City residents if a fire hit town, given we're kind of a box canyon here? Mm-hmm.
I think one of the biggest problems that we've talked about and that could become an issue is just how we get out of town. Fire's not something you can generally, you know, cover and wait out. It's something you need to get away from. And so, you know, should something catastrophic begin, it's how we get out of town, I think, is one of the biggest things. And so making sure that we have plans in place, how we're going to grab what we need quickly and remove ourselves from the scenario so that those coming in to fight the fire can actually do their jobs.
Yeah, but when we think of traffic during the ski season and how people can't get out, mm-hmm. I mean, what do you do in a fire?
You know, you do the best you can, and sometimes that may mean that there are alternative methods you've got to look at, because you're right, there are definitely points of where traffic does get compressed and there's really hard to get through there. So, you know, planning ahead and being able to find a way to get to those main arteries and then figuring out a way from there. And that may mean that there's an alternative method, whether that be on foot or something else, but trying to get away from the danger itself.
Okay. So this I mentioned is happening tomorrow, 6 o'clock, a little bit
yes.
earlier.
Yes. Yep. Tomorrow, 6 o'clock, Jim Santee Auditorium. Like you said, there's going to be representatives from the state, the federal government. We're going to have Summit County, Wasatch County, Park City will also be represented to talk about all of these types of things and have a panel discussion. So it's not necessarily this is what you need to do, but we can have more specific questions on how we can get there as a community.
Okay. Well, I got you here. What's the summer building schedule looking like?
You know, I was just looking at some numbers late last week, and we're about where we were last year. We're a little bit up. But what we've got, that's issued permits. What we've got in review now is a little bit more than we had last year. So we've got another good year slated and a lot of construction going on. So we're excited and anticipate a lot of good work.
Yeah. You have had for years just problems finding building inspectors. You were mm-hmm. telling me, though, off air, that you feel like you're up to par.
Yeah, we're getting there. Definitely, there's still a challenge with filling voids. The market for inspection staff is very well. It's under a lot of demand statewide. We're fortunate to have a staff of four, the great inspectors that are very qualified, and they've been kind of growing from within. We all of them have moved from positions within the city and become inspectors and gathered their certifications and are gathering experience currently, and we're excited about that. We've been able to hire a new inspector who has about 15 years of experience, who will be coming on later this week, that we're excited to be able to work with a little bit more. And what we've got an open application currently, and we'll be doing a recruitment here shortly, probably early to mid next week.
Okay, and you've also put Deputy Chief Building Inspector Michelle Downard has a new job.
Yeah, Michelle, who's been wonderful as the Deputy Chief Building Official, we're so excited for her new opportunity. She's taken a role as the resident advocate for the city, so she'll still be working directly with the Community Development Department and helping residents walk through our process. We understand that our process can be a little bit challenging at times, especially if you're not used to it, and so she'll be there to help with that process and be able to walk a lot of our customers through any process throughout the city, and then she'll also work with staff internally to help us as we need it, you know, throughout the year.
Yeah, so that's in response to what? I mean, complaints?
I don't know that it's in response to complaints. I think it's a proactive step to try and assist through a process. I mean, I guess you could look at it and say, yeah, our process is challenging, so we need maybe a little bit of extra help to get people through that. But I think really what we're trying to do is allow our customers to know that, you know, we understand the process can be challenging at times, but the reality is there are a couple of steps that we just have to get through. And maybe if we get the right people in the room, and Michelle will kind of facilitate that, that discussion can really take place. And Michelle's great at really getting the right people there, problem solving, and getting people on the way with their proper answers. So we're really excited about that opportunity.
Yeah. What kind of impact has it had on the building department not having a in-house engineer?
You know, we've fortunately been able to work with TO Engineers, who's contracted to do a lot of the work. So we've been fortunate to have most of the work there taken care of. And we're continuing to recruit. I know that Anne Laurent, the Community Development Director, is working closely with the executive staff and human resources to consider when the next recruitment will take place. But, you know, we've got great staff in there as well, with Corey Legg stepping up and really taking the brunt of the work and just doing a phenomenal job. So we're very, very fortunate to have who we do.
Yeah, I also wanted to ask you quickly, what was the end result with that building collapse, in the home collapse in Thames Canyon?
Yeah, so it's currently still up in the air. Well, the results, I guess, is what you're looking for. The work hasn't been done on the home yet. The results were directly related to snow and the impact there. What we got back from the engineer is that it just accumulated and didn't melt. And so as it continued to accumulate, it just sat there, and over time, the roof joists actually just gave in, and that's what collapsed. It was not faulty construction. It wasn't because anything was missed. It wasn't because anything was done incorrectly. It was just the weight of the snow, and the one thing that the homeowners had done is they had re-insulated a few years ago, and so with that re-insulation, a lot of the heat was being contained within the home, which is what's supposed to happen. But as the heat doesn't escape like it maybe would have when it was originally built in the 80s, the snow doesn't melt as much, and so it would retain a little bit more snow, and that may have had an impact. But as far as the construction and the code compliance, it was all intact.
Yeah. So is it going to get rebuilt?
The homeowner and the contractor are still back and forth. I don't know what their next steps are going to be. I've heard they've been to and fro and can't quite decide. So we'll hang on until they do.
Okay. Dave, anything else you wanted to mention?
No, I just look forward to having the community come out and kind of have a discussion about how we can continue to keep this community safe.
Okay. Dave Thacker is Park City's Chief Building Official. Thanks for your time this morning.
Thank you.
Again, Living in the Wildland Urban Interface, it's a film. The documentary Era of Megafires will be followed by a panel of guests discussing the threat of wildfires in our community, taking place Wednesday, 6 p.m. at the Jim Santee Auditorium. KPCW News Time now 8:43. Good morning. Well, May is Mental Health Awareness Month, and Connect has put together a number of events during the month. In the studio with a rundown of some of the coming events, I have Acting Director of Connect, Sherry Fisher. Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie.
Let's just take a quick look. How have things gone so far? Are you getting the participation you'd hoped for?
We are getting great participation on all of the different events and movies that we've had so far, so we've been very pleased.
Yeah, anything that stands out in terms of being really very popular? Or?
We had a great turnout the other night for Beautiful Boy, and it was a really good panel discussion led by Rob Harder from the Christian Center, and just the questions that we had, they had a couple of people that were on the panel from the drug court and talked specifically about what they had gone through with their own addiction and mental health issues. So it was an excellent program.
Yeah, it seems that you've really focused a lot on films this year. Is that just because there's so many films to do, or just a lack of speakers, or...
No, we actually, we do the Brainstorm Film Festival each year, and we try to balance it out. So we had about 7 events that were not films and 5 that were. So we really try to keep that balance. But with the films, we try to bring in really pertinent topics in the area of mental health. But then we also try to put together panels that create dialogue around the different topics of those films. And on those panels, we try to have providers, so a psychotherapist, a psychiatrist, a counselor, somebody who is working with many people who are facing these issues, also people with lived experience, to really try to personalize it and give the audience a chance to ask questions. So the films provide us with that opportunity to personalize it.
Okay, so let's see. You've got 4 films coming up here in the next couple of weeks. Let's start with the one happening tomorrow, The S Word.
The S Word movie is tomorrow night. That's Tuesday the 14th at the Jim Santee Auditorium at 6:30. We have the film producer, Lisa Klein, coming into town, and she is going to be talking about why she put this film together. She herself experienced 2 losses to suicide when she was in high school. Her father and her brother, months apart, lost their lives to suicide. And so she put together a documentary in 2017, and she follows a photographer. Her name's Desiree Stage, and she talks to different people who have attempted and survived suicide to get their stories and to really tell their stories. Because as people started to talk about it, they found that they wanted to talk about it and share their stories to be able to help anybody else who had been dealing with those same issues. And so Lisa will be here, and she will talk about the origins of the movie. And then we will also have a panel that evening that I will be moderated by Christine Napier. And then, like I said, we like to have people who have who are providers who are working with people who have issues like this. And we've invited Sam Walsh. She's a counselor at the Park City High School. And we really thought that bringing her in was that boots on the ground. She's there. She has her finger on the pulse of what's happening with our students. And also, we got some funding from Vail Epic Promise to get this in front of the students. So we really would love to have the students and the parents come out and come to this movie. It is free. All of our events are free, as you know. And then we also have Christy North. She lost her son to suicide a couple of years ago. He was 23 years old. And she has done a lot with that with her Taylor Hagen Memorial Foundation to help with suicide awareness and prevention. And then we also have Kay Harrison, who was recently featured on the front page of the Park Record, who is a suicide attempt survivor as well.
Okay, and then Thursday, it's Voices of Grief, Honoring the Sacred Journey. What's this about?
Voices of Grief is it's a film by Kathy Sparnes. She's also going to be here, so we will have that same introduction from her. And it talks about the different ways that people work through grief and loss. It's something that we all have or will go through. And so it's, how can we be on that journey? What do we learn on that journey? And how can we companion others who are on that journey? And so we will also have a wonderful panel for that. The moderator is Molly Bice Jackson, who has experienced her own loss. And then we have George Hare, who has had her own loss, but she also has worked in hospice. So she will be on the panel. And then two other people, Beth Miller and Ron Jackenthal. A lot of people have heard of Ron with the Sam Jackenthal organization that he has put together. And then Katie Grace McElveen, she's a provider who really has been the engine behind this. She deals with so many of her clients and patients who have dealt with loss that she really wanted to create a support environment for them. So we have not only this Voices of Grief film with the panel, but we have a potluck of love that's a once a month potluck that people who have experienced grief and loss can attend, and also Sharing the Journey, which is a walk or a hike that people who have experienced loss can come on. And it's not that they have to sit there and talk about it. It is a supportive group, but it's not that you have to come and talk about it. So it's really something that we wanted to present during May, but also have some support throughout the year.
Okay. And then fun for the whole family, I guess, Inside Out, a screening taking place Sunday at 2:00. This is the animated film?
This is the animated film, and Inside Out 2 is coming out in June, so we thought it would be really good to give people that refresher of Inside Out, the first film. And it is for fun, and it's to help children and adults learn about emotions. It's something that we as humans have emotions, and I don't think we're ever really taught how to deal with those emotions. And so you follow Riley through the ins and outs of her life and how she experiences her emotions as she goes through that. So if nothing else, like you said, it's for fun. But I also hope that it's a conversation starter between parents and their children. Like, when do you feel sad? And what happens when that happens? And when you are angry, you know, how do you feel? Let's talk about it. So we really hope that that opens the conversation up.
Okay, and then kind of concluding it with next Wednesday.
Next Wednesday, we thought that ending May Mental Health Awareness Month on such an up topic of happy, it is the study of happiness and how that impacts our mental health. And we really feel like this would be a great way to end the month, because mental health topics can be heavy. And we thought, let's end on something very positive. So happy's going to be our bookend.
Okay. And does that kind of conclude the events? Oh, no, you've got another one happening May 22nd. And this is it's called Images of Resilience, so it's kind of more of an art show. Yeah?
Yes. So Dr. Scott Longenecker, he's from the University of Utah Psychiatry Department. He has done something similar to Images of Resilience in Michigan, and he came out here and had the idea. And we brought it out here, and we have a call for art out for people to turn in digital images of artwork that they have either created as a coping mechanism or something that for them resembles or is the epitome of what resiliency is. And so we've had several people submit artwork that we will feature during that event. It is also, it's at the community room at the Park City Library. And we will also have art on site. So we have Kara Means, who is an artist from Salt Lake. Last year she did something called Conversation of Portraits on Mental Health. She did 10 different pieces of art that we will have some of those pieces here. We have Dana Klein, who is a photographer, and we also have Emily Laughlin, who's an artist, and she also served on our Images of Resilience Committee. And so we will have artwork there, plus the digital artwork. Scott Longenecker will talk about the science behind artwork as a coping mechanism for mental health issues and also creating mental wellness. And then we'll also have a couple of art projects, one for adults and one for children. So it's going to be sort of a hands-on type of event. So we're really excited about the Images of Resilience.
Okay. So that kind of wraps it up then.
Yes. After all that, we're exhausted. Yes, that is our May Mental Health Awareness Month lineup. But I do want to say that we have extended our educational programming throughout the year. So we look to have at least one per month throughout the rest of the year, and different topics. So we have level one, which is more awareness and education, and level two, which is really that hands-on in-depth. You walk out with some really good tools that you can use in your own life. So yeah, well, look for us coming up. We exist beyond May, I guess is what I'm saying.
Okay, and again, the website then, if people are interested in seeing the lineup?
Yes, the website is connectsummitcounty.org. Go to our calendar of events. That's the easiest way to get information on all of these events.
Okay, Sherry, thank you.
Thank
Sherry
you.
Sherry Fisher, again, the Acting Executive Director of Connect Summit County. You're listening to the Local News Hour on KPCW. Well, this Saturday, it's the 10th anniversary of Running with Ed, in the studio with an update. I have the Director of the Park City Education Foundation and the organizer of Running with Ed, Abby McNulty. Good morning.
Good morning.
I should say that the Ed Foundation is the organizer, not you.
Correct.
Specifically. It takes,
that's
it takes
right.
an army here.
It takes a huge army. Yes, it does.
All right. So are we still taking reservations if people wanted to participate? Is it too late?
It's not too late. That's a great question. So some people may still be filling their team. So they might have already purchased a team. And so they can still go ahead and fill their team online. And then if you don't have a team and are interested in running, it might be too late for t-shirts and medals and things like that, but you can reach out to us at runningwithed@gmail.com.
Okay. Any idea how much money this has raised over the 9 years that we've been doing this?
Oh, yeah. It's nearing $3 million.
Wow, that's significant.
It is. Yeah. It's a lot of money for Park City Schools.
Uh-huh. And in terms of, like, first-year registration compared to what you've got going here is...
It's amazingly different. I think back 10 years ago, it snowed on race day, and we had pop-up tents outside at New Park, and there were, you know, a handful of us getting the snow off the pop-up tents. There was like 6 inches of it, all in our sneakers and no gloves and things like that. It was our first year. Now we have 1,500 participants running. We have hundreds of volunteers. We have, like you said, an army of volunteers who help plan this event.
Okay.
It's great. It's
kicking off. Looks like you're going to have some nice weather for it. I'll be a little chilly.
Yeah. Hopefully the rain and the snow will subside, mm-hmm. and it will be a nice, cool, perfect day for running.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, let's talk a little bit about the Elementary Visual Arts Program.
Yes, the EVA program, as it's known, is an art program that was started in 2011, and it's a collaboration between the Park City Education Foundation and Kimball Arts Center, and then our elementary schools. It's offered at Parley's, McPolin, and Trailside. Jeremy Ranch has a very robust masterpieces and art program that's led by volunteers. So it takes place at the three elementary schools, and what it does is it brings art to our schools. Art is not funded by the state of Utah's basic funding formula. And so without this collaboration with Ed Foundation and Kimball, our kids wouldn't have art.
Okay, so how does it work?
We hire art specialists in each of the schools, and they serve in different capacities a little bit at each different school. At Parley's, for example, the specialist is part of the specialist rotation. So they have art almost once a week at Parley's, which is amazing. And you'll go through all of the elementary schools, and there's student art all over the walls, and it's beautiful, and the kids are super excited to see their work up and see their name. And it's wonderful. So at McPolin this year, we're looking to expand the amount of time the art specialist is at the school. Currently, kids only have art once a month. And so we'd love to double that. Art is very important to the culture of McPolin. Art is a program where all kids can succeed. And they would really love to see that expanded at McPolin.
So how does that happen?
We're raising more money, and we're trying to infuse a second art lesson during the month at McPolin. So we're just getting going on that.
Okay.
Yeah.
And let's see. Again, so we're not teaching art in any Utah schools?
Well, it's how the local schools want to, you know, decide where the money goes. So there is this wonderful program that the state of Utah and the Beverly Taylor Sorensen Foundation support, which brings art of any form into a school, and you apply for a grant. Parley's has an art instructor through that program, and the cost is shared through the state and through the local district. But Utah's the lowest funded education system in the country. I mean, it doesn't allow for, you know, science teachers, art teachers at the elementary level. It allows for an incredibly basic offering of services. And anything above and beyond that is either raised through local tax increases, or through the Education Foundation. Art is something that the Education Foundation strongly values, and we believe it's of best interest for all kids to have access to high quality art. And so that's a program that we've been supporting for many, many years, and we always look forward to supporting it.
Yeah. So what do they do in these once a week or once a month classes?
Yeah. The curriculum is written by the Kimball Arts Center. And so, for instance, I was in an art class the other month, and it was Frida Kahlo. And she's a Mexican artist. And the students learn about Frida Kahlo, and they learn about what made her unique as an artist. And so she was very sick as a child. And she also, all of her work, a lot of self-portraits, depicted her truly as she really was. And so the one example that the kids thought was funny and really stuck with them was that she had huge eyebrows and one giant eyebrow. So all of her self-portraits had these, you know, very pronounced eyebrows. And the kids were working on their own self-portraits. And so the whole conversation was, you know, this is just a reflection of you. You don't need, you know, don't make yourself something you aren't. This is who you are. What's special about your face, and it doesn't have to be perfect. And it's just a lesson like that. It was beautiful.
Okay. Probably wanted to ask you, the filing window opens for Park City Council next month. Is it something you're still interested in? I know you had applied for the appointed job
that's
when
right.
it came around.
You know what? I am all hands on deck running with Ed, excited for Saturday, and that's where my focus and attention is today.
Okay. Anything else?
That's it. Just we're still fundraising for Running with Ed, and so all the money that's raised during Running with Ed, not only for team registrations, but teams that are fundraising in additional go to support programs like the Elementary Visual Art Program.
Okay. Hey, thanks, Abby.
Thank you.
Abby McNulty is the executive director of the Park City Education Foundation.